This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 343 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, once again, from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
I think I woke up at the wrong side of my afternoon nap.
Right. Okay.
Oh, I'm a cranky man tonight, Bruce. I don't know why.
You mean crankier than normal?
I'm normally cantankerous.
This is different. Okay.
This is different. This is cranky pants. This is just just ready for a fight.
Right. Well, I'm glad I haven't been shooting this week.
So let's look at your photos. Let's look at last week's ones again, just for sake. How's your week been, my friend?
Mate, pretty good. Starting to get some final mixes happening for the album.
About time.
Yeah. So there's going to be 11 songs on the album. 5 of them we have completely finished tracking. 3 of those songs I have now mixed, so there's 2 more that I can mix. And then the other 6 songs we need to record backing vocals for, which I'm hoping is going to happen in the next couple of weeks. But
why don't we do that in the podcast, just me and you? I've got a microphone, you put a microphone. Doo-wop. Doo-wop. There you go. You can have that for free.
Sensational. I'll sample that.
There you go. I can do humpada, 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 humpada.
Bit of pitch shift and time stretch, we'll be there in no time.
Yeah, there you go.
Other than that, just working. Yeah. How's your week been?
Uneventful.
Okay. You been shooting?
Really? Nah.
Workshopping?
Yep.
Okay. Right.
It was only an Understanding Your Camera workshop, so you don't actually like take any photos.
Right.
So it's like I haven't been remotely creative this week in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. So I would imagine that particular workshop is like real newbies, people with absolutely zero idea.
Varies.
Okay.
You have the people who've unfortunately read the internet.
Right. Right.
And think they know something about photography. They come along.
Right.
And we slap them around and get them back into shape.
The ones who read the wrong instruction manual.
I had a guy once come to this workshop who'd been photographing for 70 years.
70?
Used to build his own darkroom. Used to build his own enlargers.
Wow.
Didn't have a clue what he was doing.
Is that right?
70 years and he'd been getting it wrong the whole time.
Did he not take 10,000 images in that time?
I don't know what he did wrong, dude. He mustn't have got the quota, but his understanding of photography was not 70 years of knowledge. It was, But here's the weird thing about it, though. Yeah. I get a lot of people who, and this is because I get everyone to introduce themselves at the beginning.
Yep.
Why are you here?
Yep.
Yeah. And a lot of them say, I used to love photography when I was young. I had a film camera, an SLR. I used to go out all the time, shoot all the time.
Yeah.
Then digital came out, I got myself a compact camera, and now I've just a year or so ago got myself a digital SLR, but it's too confusing for me.
Right.
And I go, but
can it be confusing?
I don't complain because I mean the pain to come, and I tell everyone it's a fairly full on day, my How to Use Your Camera workshop, because we go from no skill to shooting in full manual in a day.
Yeah, nice.
And I say, as I say to them, my bank manager highly recommends they come to the class at least 3 times. So it's a fairly full on day, but I mean, it's like, well, nothing's changed in photography.
No.
As far as the actual, the nuts and bolts.
Not the mechanics of it. Not between a film camera and a digital camera. It's still ISO, shutter speed, and aperture.
Exactly.
And focal length.
But it's, once again, it's one of those things where they're just completely bamboozled by it. So some of it's just holding their hands and getting them back to where they were, or hopefully a bit further along than where they were when they used to do film stuff.
Yeah, right.
So I had 13 people on Saturday. And,
wow.
And that's what's tricky. You have such varying levels of skills across a moderately large group of people. It requires a phenomenal, phenomenal teacher to be able to make it come together. But we didn't have one of those, so that's put up with me.
I was waiting for it. dear.
So that's my only creative outlet for the week. I was commissioned today to do two portraits, though.
Right.
By my wife. She sent me a photo of her desk with the two old photos of the kids on it. Goes, I need new ones.
Right.
So I've been commissioned, a portrait commission.
Excellent.
I've spent the week trying to get myself organized for America and pretty much failed miserably.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to spend the week getting like the accommodation, the car hire, everything organised.
Right.
And I got nothing. Right. Still haven't got anywhere to live.
So the most important question,
yeah,
of the whole week.
Yes.
As posed by Carl, I think it was this afternoon on Facebook.
Yes.
Oh, how did you go at the cure? Did you manage to stay awake for the 3 hours?
Well, I yelled at them. I said, look, if you didn't go off for as many bloody encores, they have four encores.
Oh, what?
If you don't go off four times, there's 15 minutes saved off the length of the concert. It's only 3 hours, and they only paid 2 hours 59, so I felt a bit gypped because I paid up.
Right. Short change.
But the thing is, same set, 20 minutes less. So either played faster.
Yeah.
Took less breaks between the encores. I don't know, yeah. They came on 36 minutes late, which already had me annoyed.
Right.
But see, I hadn't planned. Okay, you're on at 7:30.
Yeah.
You had to pay for 3.5 hours. That's 11.
Yeah.
Be home in bed before 12.
Yeah.
Picked up the kids and, you know, babysitter.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, 8:06.
Oh.
Yeah, no, there's 36 minutes added to your. So you're kids in bed by one instead. Oh. Yeah. But the show was excellent.
Yeah.
It was musically very, very good. And
played all the hits?
Majority of them.
Okay.
And some obscure stuff and some just, you know, not hits, but the good songs off the albums. So it was a good show.
But did they omit any obvious, you know, killers that they should have had?
Not really.
Okay, cool.
But you know.
Not like the Church, who refused to play Unguarded Moment.
I know. But there's
anybody outside of Australia who has absolutely zero idea of who the Church are or what the Unguarded Moment is. Hey?
The Church were moderately big in America.
Really?
Yeah, with the Under a Milky Way Tonight song.
Oh, yeah, it's a great track.
It gets a bit of playtime over there.
Okay.
But you know you're getting old when you're walking around the concert venue and everyone's got beards down their bellies and they're all beards are white, you know. The majority, the problem is you can't get a handicap parking spot within 500 miles of the place because all those oldies have had to park in the Clinton handicap spots to walk too far. Everyone was old.
Yeah, right.
I mean, old. Yeah. Oh, speaking of old, I'll go back to the cure in a second.
Yeah.
At my workshop on Saturday was a girl I went to high school with.
No way.
And my goodness, have we all aged or what? Now, the worst thing is about the girl coming from the high school, she had a nickname at school.
Oh, okay.
That was not very complimentary and one I can't even say on said podcast.
Right.
But it made it very hard for me to look her in the eyes.
Oh.
But anyway, the cure. So everyone's really old. But so you know you're old when you're waiting for the band to come on and a guy in front, because it's a standing room where we were, a guy in front of you starts doing his limbering up exercises, just stretching his hamstrings, his calf muscles, he's twisting his back and stretching his shoulders. You know.
Like he's about to run the city to surf.
Yeah, just so he can survive the show. It's like, oh, we are old. People, we are old. But it was a good night out. So that's
excellent.
And but it's like, yeah, it's like anything. When you can tell another sign you're getting old, it's, you know, oh, they're coming to Australia to play, let's get tickets. And then on the night, it's like, oh, I can't be bothered going. It's cold, it's wet, it's dark already. that was my week.
Excellent.
Now, one other thing, and this is actually starting to talk about photography, so excuse me, buttoned in there with this.
Yeah.
I've been just updating my presentation for the Camera Club talk I'm doing tomorrow night.
Right.
And I'm also doing the same talk in the US in Santa Rosa.
Right.
So I'm sort of tweaking it, doing a version for them and a version for here. And it's on street photography, or actually more in reality, it's on street portraits.
Right.
And it's the subtitle is The Art of Photographing People You Don't Know.
Yeah. So this is not candidly shooting from 50 meters away without them knowing. This is actually going up and having a conversation.
And trying to take the photo after the said conversation.
Yeah.
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 So it's called Street Photography versus Street Portraits, The Art of Shooting People You Don't Know. But whilst putting in some street photo shots that I've been doing, I came across this quandary. I have this photograph from the Ganges in Varanasi in India,
yeah,
of this young boy sitting on the bow of a boat with his foot just sort of dangling, almost touching the river.
Yeah.
He's looking down at the water, and it's lovely. Yeah, it's emotive. It's all compact. It's all there. It's a shot.
There's a story in it. Yep.
Yeah, but I'm going, hang on a sec, but he's on a boat in a river.
It's not in a street.
It's not a street photo. It's not in a street.
I think that still qualifies, though, doesn't it?
Well, see, here's the thing. Doesn't it lend the question to, we need a person on boat photography? We need house photography?
Isn't the Ganges like the Indian equivalent of George Street in Sydney?
So what's it? the whole terminology of street gets to me.
Okay.
What is street photography?
Well, to me, it's people going about, you know, their lives.
Where?
It doesn't necessarily have to be a street.
Library photography.
Hey?
If they're in the library, is that library photography?
Well.
If they're in shopping centres, it's shopping centre photography.
Is it?
That's what I'm saying. You can't break it down to every genre.
No.
Every location.
So all those things can pass as being street photography in my book.
So why is it called street?
Oh, I think because that's where it starts. You know, the idea of
started in the streets.
Well, the idea of approaching somebody that you don't know.
But even if you're not approaching them, if you're standing back and shooting them from, because street photography isn't really approaching people you don't know. Street photography is shooting people so they don't know.
Yeah, shooting from afar. Yeah.
Yeah. So
okay.
So why?
Why is it called street photography?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe no one had a better idea.
I expected you, off the cuff without me giving you any warning, to have an answer for this.
Well, like I said, I don't think, street photography requires that the subject be on a street.
Well, it doesn't. It obviously doesn't. But, why is it called street photography if it doesn't? Why can't it be candid photography or living photography or some other? Why street? Where does it come from?
Fair enough. I don't know. I really think it's because a lot of, photographers have started out by doing that style of photography as they are walking down the street. They've seen someone who's, for whatever reason has captured their eye. Whether it be what they're wearing or the expression on their face or the texture of their skin or, their weird and wonderful hair or whatever it was. I think it started there, and that's just my take on it. I might be wrong.
You might be.
Might be.
You just never know. So here's it. So looking at the most accurate resource on the planet, Wikipedia.
Right.
They say that street photographer can be seen as an extension of the flaneur.
The what?
The flaneur.
What's that?
Oh, come on. I don't know. Let me keep reading. An observer of the streets,
right,
who was often a writer or an artist. So before photography was invented.
Yeah.
There was these things people called flaneurs.
Right.
Flaneurs who were artists. Or writers who would sit and write about what they saw, or sit and paint what they saw in the streets.
Okay.
And it comes from the meaning of stroller or lounger or saunterer or loafer. Refers to the act of strolling around and remarking on what you saw.
This is the phrase flaneur.
Flaneur, which is where that saying eventually then became into street photography.
Right.
Interesting.
Okay.
I thought, anyway.
Right.
Now, so the next question on flaneuring.
Right.
We should call it that. It's a bit cooler.
Flaneuring.
Yeah, you're off to love. I'm going to do a bit of flaneuring.
Coming off flaneuring.
Oh, I haven't had a good flaneur in ages. Ooh, going to a flaneuring exhibition. Sounds a hell of a lot better than street photography, I tell you right now. I'm going to start a web page. Yeah. Flaneur are us. And just get all these people who've liked to flaneur to join us in one big, it's like Flickr, but flaneur.
Of course.
I can see it working. Why is it majority in black and white?
Again, I think, two things. I think, the art form I think
you're making this up as you go along.
Yeah, I am. That it developed in the early days of photography when black and white was the only option. And then the other side of it is that there are those within the photographic community who feel that colour in photography is actually a distraction from the subject matter.
Unless the subject matter is the colour.
True.
Because then it's not a distraction, it's the thing!
Yeah.
Yeah, like you're taking a photo of someone playing snooker or pool on the pool table.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, white ball into the black ball. You're going to need to know what colour. So here's the thing. If you go to Google image search and type in street photography, on the first page out of the, was it, 5, 10, 15, out of the first 20 images, there's four colours.
Right.
Four out of 20. The next lot of 20, there's only two colour.
Yeah.
Next lot, maybe six colour.
Yeah.
So you're going to say 60, 70% of all black and white
street photography is black and white.
It's black and white.
Yeah. Is there a problem with that?
I think it's incredibly limiting.
Okay, well, that's your opinion.
Maybe the challenge is to do great street photography in colour.
Sure.
That's going to be an option. It's all black and white. I'm just going through page after page after page of street photography.
Yeah. Okay. Each to their own. There's no right or wrong.
But, but it's not. It's not each to their own. It's each to everybody else doing the same thing. Each to their own. You would imagine if it was each to their own, it'd be roughly equal.
If in the Glyn Lavender universe, if it was each to their own, there'd be two people doing photography, one guy's doing black and white, and one guy's doing colour, and no one else is allowed to play.
But each to their own doesn't mean everyone doing exactly the same thing.
That's right.
You agree?
That's
each to their own means everyone's just following along like sheep. Oh, I'm taking photos of the street, better be black and white. Because everyone else does it in black and white, I better do it in black and white. 80% of people can't be wrong, but they can. They might just be.
Yeah.
Flaneur Arras, my friend. Flaneur. Colour Flaneur Arras. That's me, yeah. Colourful on earth. There we are.
Excellent.
I can see that taking off.
I'm sure it will. What have you got for us?
Well, I want to talk about Rob Coates' email to us.
Oh, absolutely. Would you like me to read it?
You read it. I think it even gets sick of hearing my voice.
G'day, boys. I felt the need to put in my 20 cents worth on the topic raised last week of what to tell a newbie photographer. Firstly, I'd tell them to never, ever post a shot online or show anyone a photo where the horizon isn't level. Nothing kills an otherwise good photograph stone dead. Secondly, make sure you listen to the Shutters Inc. podcast because every now and then you'll learn something. Just every now and then. Thirdly, I'd give them a quick rundown on the exposure triangle. This is something I couldn't agree with you on, Glyn. Telling them about what wonderful photos they can take and not teaching them the, what I consider, relatively simple relationship between aperture, shutter speed, and ISO is like telling a learner driver about the joys of touring and the convenience of being able to drive, but not teaching them what those pedals on the floor are for. I agree that the little boy whose auntie told him about sex when he was 8 years old was probably a few years premature, but if he ended up expecting to turn into a woman when he became 13, that says more about how she explained it than anything else. I was a carpentry teacher in TAFE for nearly 30 years, and if you said to me, could you explain how a timber roof frame is built, I'd say, do you want the 10-minute lesson or the all-day one? Most things can be taught basically or in depth. In your opening comments, you used the word advice, but later on the word inspire. If I wanted to inspire someone to take up photography, I wouldn't tell them how wonderful it can be, I'd show them. Collect a sample of good photographs and explain to the newbie why they're good. But unless you're going to be happy for them to set their camera to auto, not something I would imagine a professional photography teacher would advocate, some understanding of the exposure triangle is pretty important. Keep up the good work, fellas. Rob Coates, Perth.
What a load. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, did you hear me over talking you all the way through the opening part?
Yeah. I just talked all over you.
So here's the thing. Yeah. I agree and disagree with Rob.
Okay.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Firstly, if the very first thing you'd ever say to someone is don't post a photo on the internet where the horizon's crooked, I think maybe that's maybe less than 10 or something. Maybe I'd say less than 1. Secondly, couldn't be more wrong. Listen to Shutter's Inc. podcast. I mean, what's the man's a fool. There was that top 16 list of podcasts that we were on a couple of years ago. Remember that? But we were like, you know, number 18 or something. Listen to the other 15. Third, I would definitely not go anywhere near the exposure triangle.
Well,
once again, but depends on, remember, once again, talk about newbie. We're talking about, yeah. Let's talk about age group. I'm looking at teaching a 9-year-old.
Right.
Quickest way to kill photography
yeah.
is to try and explain that in the early part.
Yeah.
Bruce, your idea of keep it fun is far better.
That was your idea originally, I think.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but I just want to make you feel good, dude.
Right.
You
know?
I do like his, do you want the 10-minute lesson or the all-day one?
Yeah.
So that's excellent. That's a great way of thinking. But no, I thought it was almost there. I was, I love the bit about it. I wouldn't tell them how wonderful it'd be. I'd show them. I thought, awesome. And then he changed that into, I collect a sample of good photographs and explained that I'd show them by going out and doing it with them.
Yeah.
Because showing them art that you like doesn't necessarily mean it's going to inspire them because it's just stuff that you like.
Absolutely.
So that could be a bit of especially with kids, you know.
Yep.
Oh, I really like this landscape because it's got the lovely rule of thirds and the sun is separation through the clouds at a 45-degree angle. I'm not saying Rob talks like that much. But I'd rather go out and show than necessarily show. And then maybe once you've gone out and done it and then looked at and reviewed each other's photos – then maybe looked at some comparable shots online of similar subject matter.
Yeah.
To give different viewpoints, maybe. Yeah. So
let's discuss what has been done differently.
Yeah, or let's go shoot down through the city, then come out and look at each other's images, see how we saw it differently. And I really like Ken's thing, like a photo treasure hunt.
Yeah, right.
From last week. So you go out, you do your photo treasure hunt, you come back, you review it, look at each other's images, have an independent judge if you want to judge who had the better photos, and then look online at similar stuff to get other ideas. And then once you've gone through it, and I would certainly advocate shooting in auto because there's a time and place for every mode on a camera for starters.
Yeah.
And when you're starting, especially for young kids starting out, having some early successes, not a bad thing.
True.
And the first thing I teach them is exposure compensation.
Yep.
Auto and exposure compensation is my first port of call because auto and a dimmer switch.
Yeah,
because people got to kind of grasp the concept of a dimmer switch. This way it makes the next photo brighter. That way it makes it darker.
Yeah,
and if you can grasp that concept, you're already starting to visualize how you want the image to look.
Yeah,
you can worry about brightness. Then you can start teaching them about the art of blurring, or either with shutter speed or aperture, the art of freezing, the art of depth, and then the numbers that make those things possible will naturally flow onto that, and then into exposure triangle, et cetera, et cetera. I think you'd have to step it simply like that. But it's been a good exercise thinking about this last couple of episodes. It's
cool.
It's come up with some good different ideas. So go on, you Rob, for taking the time to send it to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lovely man.
Absolutely. All right. What else you got on your list?
Me?
Yeah.
I was going to look at your list.
Oh, we can look at my list too, if you want.
What's this Chinese Optics 12mm F2?
Right. So this was something that I came across on Google through the week, reading on Google Newsstand. And this is about, I don't even know how they pronounce the name of this brand.
Yeah, I'm not going to even try.
Laowa. I don't know. Anyway, this company's about to...
Laowa.
Yeah, thank you. So this company is about to start a Kickstarter project. In fact, it might have already launched by the time this podcast comes out, for a 12mm f2.8 ultra wide angle lens. Now, whoop-de-doo, you might say. The claim to fame with this is it's a rectilinear lens, which means that it doesn't converge the verticals like most fisheye lenses will do. So even though it's 12mm, it will keep your verticals. So if you're shooting, you know, a city land, you know, a cityscape, it will keep all the verticals parallel and not have them, you know, if you're looking up from ground level at high-rise buildings, they won't all converge kind of thing, which I thought was interesting.
Interesting.
Hmm.
I hate to say it, but I think there's something doesn't ring true.
In what sense?
In the Kickstarter project.
Right.
In that it's up and running.
Right.
And their original goal was $10,000.
Okay.
Now, $10,000 ain't going to fund anything.
No.
It's not going to fund diddly anything.
Yeah.
Now, they're up to $391,000.
Right.
But here's the point, though. Now, things like Kickstarter, you only get the money if you go beyond your goal.
Yep.
Okay? So putting such a low goal, they're pretty much assured that they can get the money.
Yeah, right.
If they get the money and they can't produce the goods,
they don't have to give the money back.
Get the money back, exactly.
Yeah.
I just find that is very suspicious to have such a low pricing point.
Yeah, right.
Now the delivery time frame for these things was November 2016.
Right.
And to me, that means that spanks of, well, we've already got the product.
Right.
Because you can't design
and prototype build
ship in 4 months. That's just not a practice. So, therefore, what's the Kickstarter about?
That's a good point.
Other than a way of
getting
people on board. It's just a marketing thing, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
We've got a low price out there.
If you look at
we get a bunch of people.
The link that I've posted in the show notes, there is actually a YouTube video where the guy's been out and shot with the lens. So, clearly, the lens has already been made.
And that can happen because they have prototypes.
Okay.
But, you know, I just don't quite get. In fact, here we go. You can be the very first to get one if you pledge $850 US, and it'll be available to you in early September.
Yeah,
now,
right.
It's August 3 today.
Yeah.
There's 26 days still to go on the backing, on the pledge. There's August 29.
Yeah.
This just spanks of not a genuine Kickstarter project where they need to kickstart the project because the project's already done.
Yeah,
they're just trying to get people to prepay for, I don't know, some of the advertising, marketing, whatever it may be. Just seems it seems very strange.
Interesting.
Doesn't mean it's not going to happen. Doesn't mean it's not going to exist. But I just think maybe they're just taking advantage of the system.
More than likely, they wouldn't be the first.
Yeah. So it says we've already finished all the testings on the prototypes and the results are very encouraging. We are currently working day and night, there better be, to prepare lens for mass production, and our whole team is extremely confident. This will be the most successful lens ever built under our current product portfolio. Okay, that makes sense.
Which may not be saying a whole lot.
So I don't know. Just watch this space kind of thing. I'd be curious to see how it ships, where it ships, what sort of quantity. They've already got, 466 backers.
Yeah. If one of our listeners is one of those people, please keep us in the loop.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
We heard a couple of things posted by Carl this week. One was from Engadget, and it was Adobe's Lightroom app for Apple TV helps show off your photos.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why you would need a Lightroom app on your TV just to show photos, because I thought just about every TV was capable of running a photo slideshow these days.
It is. Should be able to.
Right.
There are already ways to show off your photography skills on television via the Apple TV, but Adobe is making those in-home exhibitions a bit easier.
Right.
Why is it easier?
Any
photos that you have synced with Lightroom on the desktop, mobile or web are available to display on your television. So if you've got them in the cloud, you've got access to them basically.
Yeah, but I've got stuff on Google Photos and I can browse that on my TV as well. So, what is interesting though is it does offer the ability to zoom in on the images. And that's something, take that to the bank. So that's something you don't get with your regular, TV slideshow of photos. But I'm not sure that I'd be,
I don't want to look at my photos.
Racing down to the Apple store for that.
I don't want to look at my photos. Too. I often when I do talks to clubs, I say, and they put the photos up on the big screen, can you make the screen a bit smaller? My photos look better when they're smaller. Another thing I've been doing, I've been busy rewriting my intro for my Canberra clubs.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I got tired of following people like at the big shows. Like, oh, yeah, whose work's been featured in magazines such as Vogue and all sorts of stuff. And so I'm doing Glenn, whose works has been featured in such prestigious arenas as his mum's blog, Aldi catalog, page 47, August 1972. Yeah, all that kind of stuff. I'm trying to think of the crappiest possible things I can think of to highlight myself.
Nice. The other one from Carl, and this was also posted by Adam, was to the site called plotographpro.com.
Or Plotograph, depending on...
Or Plotograph, yes. Because the guy who developed it is Tony Plotter. Or Plotter.
Plotograph, yeah. It's like DP Review or DP Review.
Yeah. Exactly. So for those who haven't seen this, essentially it's a piece of software that will allow you to create an animated GIF out of a single still image. How it does it, I don't know. But there, if you go to the website, which I've got in the show notes, there are some example animated GIFs on the website that you can have a look at, and they're pretty cool.
It's on special too at the moment.
Is it?
Yeah, it's $50 off at the moment. It's only $299 US.
Right. You'd want to be a serious animated GIF lover, wouldn't
you? You'd want to be a serious photographer, wouldn't you?
You would. So, yeah, that's something interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure we covered this or something similar to it 6-8 months ago. But
oh, okay. I don't remember that.
Yeah, which is the only reason I didn't take it. I can remember balking at the price, or I saw it and didn't say it because it looks the price.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay. We heard from Steve Peters this week.
Yes.
And the first of Steve's stories was 10 photography accessories you can buy at the supermarket.
Yeah.
So the first is cupcake nozzles.
And oh, for poker.
Yeah.
Put them over your lens.
Yeah, or over your light source, in this case a torch, to create, you know, funny little star shapes. next one was shower caps, which could be used to diffuse a flash.
Yeah. Or just plain garbage bags. They come in rolls of 20. It's much easier.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. LED light strips. So, you know, these things, the example image shows them wrapped around the outside of the lens. So to act almost like a ring light for macro photography. That's a clever use, I guess. a multi-purpose opener. Okay,
yep.
I'm not sure what you... Okay, for getting jammed filters off the front of lenses. Okay.
You want to be a big opener because most of my filters are like 77 or 82.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Glow sticks, which obviously, yeah, you could do some creative lighting stuff slow shutter speeds. Shower curtains, again, used for, you know, diffusion.
Yes.
Ball bungee ties, good for just strapping things.
All that stuff together, yeah.
Together. Spring clamps, I've got some of those in my kit.
They also have autumn clamps and winter clamps. Very nice.
Yeah. So spring clamps are the ones that look like fish. You just squeeze them open and, hey?
Yep.
What? Yeah.
Express
grill pan. Oh, okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, there you go. So
I sure should do that.
An express grill pan apparently has holes in it. And what they've done is put it in front of an LED light panel, and so you get all these great shadows as the light shines through.
You know what you could also do?
What's that?
Put it in front of a flash.
No.
No, serious?
Man, no, that's some out-of-the-box thinking right there, people. well, that's 9. What was 10? Oh, reusable putty-like adhesive, so blue tack.
That's putty, they call it. Putty.
Nice. You might. You and your D preview.
You know, I reckon you could find other stuff there.
You probably
you
could.
Like a, you could, because I've used milk containers as snoots for my flash guns.
Oh, really?
Like one liter milk container. Well,
okay.
When I was in New York, I couldn't find a snoot, so I rummaged through his garbage tin, found a one at the back of the shop.
Oh, so the cardboard ones.
Found a 1 liter cardboard container with milk, chopped the ends off, and used it as a snoot.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
There's all sorts of stuff. I'm sure you could find it. You could get like a 2 liter orange juice container.
Yeah.
Chop the bottom off, fire your flash up into it. You've got a big Gary Fong diffuser.
Yep.
Yeah. There's a million tools.
Heck of a lot cheaper.
See, these digital photography school, now all power to, he's a Melbourne guy, all power to this guy who runs it. He makes a squillion off this site.
Yeah.
But the majority of the stuff is pretty, I don't know. Anyway, you could do a top 1,000 things from the supermarket, I reckon, and beat his by 990.
Next one that Steve gave us was a link to a video from some clown that calls himself an Alan Crom ambassador. I have no idea. It was guy clearly knew nothing. He was sitting in front of the softbox, and the softbox was behind him facing the other way. So, you know, anyway.
No idea.
No idea. I think it'll be in the show notes for those that want to check that one out.
Ambassador of idiocy.
That's right. And then the third one from Steve was the story, and again, this was also posted by Adam. A photographer files a $1 billion lawsuit.
You better put your little finger to your mouth when you say that. $1 billion
against Getty Images for licensing her public domain images. I thought this was a very interesting story. This woman, Carol Highsmith, she took all these photos, I imagine through the 70s and 80s, and she gave them to the Library of Congress under, you know, public domain, basically saying anyone can use these images. And
they did.
Little beknownst to her, Getty went and claimed copyright on these images, and she only found out about this when she receives a letter from Getty telling her that she is in breach of their ownership of this image because she had it on her website. And she went, excuse me, that's my image and it's public domain. And of course, then she's looked into it and found that all of these images that she has shot, they've claimed copyright ownership of and have been charging for them. So she is quite rightly miffed.
Miffed is exactly the word I was going to use.
Sorry?
Exactly the word I was going to use.
Yeah. So she's filed a $1 billion copyright infringement suit against Getty Images for 18,755 of her photographs. I hope she wins.
So it turns out, I'm just reading, because Getty's done a response apparently. I haven't read that bit yet.
Oh, okay.
But Getty not only have been distributing the images, but a company called License Compliance Services was pursuing unauthorized use of the photos on their behalf.
Right.
An official statement released, Getty believed the complaint is based on a series of misconceptions, which they are hoping to address directly. Barring that, they will defend ourselves vigorously. They go on to say, it is standard practice for image libraries to distribute and provide access to public domain content, which is true, and that distributing and providing access should not be confused with asserting copyright ownership.
Thus,
we assume in a direct response to the lawsuit, which states, Getty are not only unlawfully charging licensing fees, but are falsely and fraudulently holding themselves out as the exclusive copyright owner.
I hope the EFF get on board and help her to beat Getty on this.
The EFF?
The EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Oh.
You're not familiar with the EFF?
I can't say I've anything to do with the EFF. No one's ever stolen a photo of mine. No one likes my stuff enough to
steal. The EFF don't only deal with photography, but they're all about, you know, well, as the name suggests, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. It's all about the copywriting and protection of digital art in all of its forms. And they are I don't know how you would describe them. They're a collective who go in to fight for the little guy, basically. And so I sincerely hope they get on board and help her with this, because I think Getty seriously need to be slapped and slapped hard for this.
Well, that's just my take. It's a standard practice, though, that image stock libraries have free images and buy images you can pay for.
Right.
So, and the free images are public domain images that you get. So that's been ongoing practice for a very long time. I don't know how much she has to argue the point. If she's got them out there saying anyone can use them, and someone did, albeit to pass on to somebody else.
But did they give them away for free?
Does it matter?
Well, if what I'm saying is that if Getty were charging for the use of them, then they'd need to be slapped.
But the use could be, oh, you accessed and downloaded our servers. We maintain the images on here. You access them through our system. Therefore, there's a fee to be charged for the use of our system and the images. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's slippery slope, though. It's be definitely worth watching. It's not the end we'll hear of this. I'm sure of that.
You know? No, well, I'd certainly like to hear where it goes from here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if those of our listeners who were interested in that story want to keep an eye on it, please let us know if there are any developments.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think it's probably, before we get on to your stuff, we're probably about time that we hear from David Marlin with another book review.
Again?
Off you go, David.
Man, just can't keep off the podcast, can he?
Thanks, Bruce. Are you feeling bored? Uninspired? You got photographer's block, haven't you? Yeah, we all get it from time to time. But the trick is how to get out of it. And there's no one way to do that. How do you break out of the ennui you're in? How do you think of different ways of doing what could be the mundane? In my case, I have a go by going to a book, and in particular, the photo book. And if I was to be precise, its real name is the photography book. It's published by Phaidon. It's got lovely, nice, warm, friendly letters of the photo book on the outside in multiple colours with a blue background. Very Hitchhiker's Guide. And it's got 500 images of famous events, people, sport, fashion, landscapes. And in one respect, it's quite a remarkable achievement because there's only one photo per photographer. Now, some of these photographers have got very large catalogues, and yet to select only one photograph, I think is quite amazing. I mean, I have enough trouble selecting three or four photos from a single shoot, but to select one photograph from a body of work like that, that's quite remarkable. And in one respect, it gets you thinking about why did Ian Jeffrey choose the photo he chose to represent the photographer? And yes, there are the famous shots like Dorothea Long's migrant mother and Robert Capra's death of a loyalist soldier. But why were the selected images of Man Ray and Cartier-Bresson, Richard Avedon and Ansel Adams the ones that he selected? Each photograph is listed by the photographer and has a brief description and a pointer to other similar photographers. So it's useful if your mind wants to follow a theme. And the themes seem to be quite many and varied. There are, for example, a number of nudes. And although the human body hasn't changed much, the number of angles by which people look at them is quite remarkable. There's hands. There's still lifes. There's up-close portraits. There are a lot of other commonplace things and objects that show the inventiveness of perspective of some people. You know, there's a simple one by Patrick Toscani called D, which is just a spoon, and yet it's quite remarkable. And as I flick through, I see that there's one by a guy with a name that's nearly unpronounceable, Frederick Seidenstucker, leaping the puddle that really resembles, to some extent, but different, the Cartier-Bresson. There's Daguerre's Boulevard du Temple. Now, that's a fairly famous photograph. There are no people virtually in the photograph because of the long exposure. But hang on a minute. I reckon if I put a big stopper in front of my lens and I go now up to One Tree Hill, and I reckon if I aim it down the road, I might... Oh, and hang on, there's a still life of grapes here that's pretty... Well, that's given me an idea. Look, guys, I'm going to be busy for a little while now. But I can tell you now that the photography book by Ian Jeffrey is now in a second edition. The hardback is about $70. It's also got 550 photographs in it now. And I also noticed that there's a cheaper softback version available. So I'm going to head off now, but before I do, I better find where I put that CF card. Cheers.
Well, I didn't even get to hear that before it went to the podcast. So it was as much a surprise to me as it was to you.
And was to it? Tell me what you liked about it most. What's your favourite bit, Bruce?
You are a shocker.
I like the bit he said about, you know, the bit he said after the first bit.
Yeah, that bit.
And the way he surmised it at the end.
Yeah. Oh,
classic. I mean, perfect. If there was a Logie, if there was like an Oscar for book reviews,
yep,
on really low volume podcasts, are we going to get the bronze medal in the Oscars? Absolutely.
Sensational. So what have you got on your list?
Oh, you know, I was browsing across one of my favourite websites earlier in the week, the Fried Sheckman Goldman Finkelstein website.
The what?
The Fried Sheckman Goldman Finkelstein. It's up there with the preview, don't you? Come on, don't you keep up with
Where's the link for this?
This is the Perspective Aware. They've been working on a thing called Perspective Aware.
Right.
They're trying to get the name before Adobe steals it and licenses it to them. But they've been working on an algorithm which fixes perspective issues. So if you do a selfie of yourself with your iPhone or whatever, which has a wide-angle lens and distorts the face, this app will de-distort.
Wow.
And whack your face back in a normal spot.
It'll unwhack you with the ugly stick.
It'll de-stretch. It'll push it back.
Excellent.
So they're calling it Perspective Aware. So this will also probably do all sorts of stuff with all sorts of things you'd imagine, as far as just faces at some point. But it looks like, I just thought it was a cool little thing. People could have a little browse on that. And for those looking at where the cutting edge stuff is happening and where your next Photoshop features may be.
Yeah, right.
Then I came across this, this is like a nice article, how to turn a boring vacation photo into something better. Well, here we go. Good travel photography tips, I thought. Here we go.
Yeah.
And so they've got an A and a B shot. Right. It's out in front of the Louvre in Paris.
Yeah.
Well, basically, what it turns out to be, how to turn a boring vacation photo into something awesome, is take a better one away from everything else. At a better angle.
Change the angle, change the lighting, change the focal length.
Make it more interesting.
Change your distance to the subject.
Yeah. Take a better photo. Turns out to be the main overall tip, this one. Last year, my girlfriend and I took a trip to London and Paris for her birthday. Lovely. Since we're both always shooting photos wherever we go, we really get images of us together. So we started making a trend to get at least one epic photo together.
Right.
Wow. So they took this photo, and it turned out to be crap. So they said, well, this isn't very good. And it turns out she blinked. So they didn't even bother reshooting it since he wasn't happy with it. There are tons of people in the shot. The lighting's terrible. We look corny. It just wasn't working. It's more or less a typical vacation photo would probably look like. So we walked around some more, ended up in the courtyard of the palace. It was deserted. We set a better photo up. We got some nice sun flare and took a better photo. There you go, people. If you want better vacation photos, here's the trick.
Take better vacation photos.
You heard it here first. Thank you for coming.
Well,
now,
second.
Just goes to prove,
heard Rob, it here second.
Rob Coates, section number two, was completely correct. If you listen to Shutter's podcasts every now and then, you hear something valuable. Well, you heard it here tonight. Take better vacation photos to have better vacation photos.
Excellent.
That's going to be rule number one. Every photo tour I lead from now on.
Sensational.
How to take great photos on this tour, people, is to take great photos. Next. Then I came across this thing, another thing that's been tested by the Michigan Institute of Technology, the MIT.
Right.
How memorable is your photos? Now, you can upload a photo to this site or drop a URL onto this site, and it will rate its memorability.
Right.
And I'm sad to say, most of mine not very memorable.
Right.
Yeah, kind of quite shocking, frankly. Yeah.
Okay.
But what a bizarre little concept.
That is very.
There's some little computer's going to tell you whether your photo's any good or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to upload one anyway from tonight.
Yeah.
I've uploaded. It's computing. It's computing as we speak. And, it's got high memorability. It's got a score of 0.777.
Out of 10.
Hopefully it's up to 0.778, because if it was, that'd be awesome. it's an interesting little and then they've got this little slider that you can slide, and it'll show you where your hot spots of memorability are. Right. And where your cold spots are weakening your photograph. So rather than your rule of thirds, your Fibonacci swirl or your golden calf, all those rules, maybe we should have the memorability slider.
Right.
And we have this on there, and we can slide, and we see where the hot spots are. We put stuff in there. And where there's cold spots, we don't put stuff there.
Right.
And then when we're on vacation, we just take a better photo. But I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Then I came across this other thing where the camera adds 10 pounds. You always heard that saying, camera adds 10 pounds. Well, this is a guy who's done a series of portraits using a whole range of different focal lengths.
Yep.
And it just shows you how different the face size looks based on. Yeah. And we talked about this the other week about how the 50mm lens, to me, is a horrible thing for portraits. But this is just kind of interesting. It just shows you how you can look fatter with some lenses, thinner with other lenses.
Well, the interesting thing is that the face gets wider the longer the focal length.
Mm.
That kind of surprised me. I hadn't.
It's compressing the back of his head.
Yeah.
His hair's getting bigger too. Notice that?
Yeah, I did notice that.
It was big to start with, and it got bigger as it went on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, the wide angle sort of pinches everything too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's sort of pinching effect. The problem is we don't know what he looks like to start with. What does his head actually look like? this is where I get these things drive me crazy. But for people who don't understand what the effect lenses have on subjects, I thought this was a pretty good little GIF.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll put that out there just for those who want to. Then I came across this thing, Sony used it, but what can you do?
Yeah.
35mm sensor versus crop sensor for portraits, which is better. And he's basically gone along and shot the same focal length, roughly the same aperture, 1.7 versus 1.8, on a 35mm sensor camera and a crop sensor camera. And you can see the difference in the results.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of a good visual justification if you had to show the missus why you need a better camera.
Yep.
Look, honey, I get better photos of these young girls. And she's going, no, I haven't. You can't have it. No. But it certainly shows a good visual change. And if you don't do a lot of that sort of stuff, well, there's no need to upgrade your camera.
Yeah.
Stay where you are.
For sure.
And last but not least, I popped back to 2009.
Did you just?
Jeez, I went all the way back to
call you the doctor.
I learned something I'd never considered or contemplated.
Right.
But this is an article on why higher ISO leads to larger file sizes.
What?
Yep. The higher the ISO you shoot, the larger your file sizes are.
Bollocks.
It's true. And I've never thought of it before. But when you read through the article and you look at the file sizes and everything else, it's... So this guy shot a photo, as an example, a RAW photo at 100 ISO. It was a 10.2 megabyte size. Remember, it's a 2009 camera.
Yeah.
But at 3200 ISO, exactly the same shot was 14.7 meg.
Really?
A 44% larger file size because of the higher ISO.
I'm not sure I believe that.
I'll have a read.
Okay.
Isn't it? I thought it was very cool. And it kind of makes sense because there's more data in it. Noise data.
How is there?
Noise data.
Bollocks.
There's all this noise in there. It's
the
no longer
number
just a plain...
of pixels has not changed.
But the amount of data that the because even a raw file is that
bollocks.
Read it.
Bollocks.
Read it.
Every pixel amounts to a certain amount of data.
Read it. So why is it when I take a photograph of a white wall with nothing on it and a photo of a white wall with a painting on it? The file
You're talking about JPEGs. This specifically says RAW files.
Okay, well, he's specifically taken two photos and given two completely different file sizes.
I don't believe it.
Read it.
I don't believe it.
Well, you read it. And come back. You come back and argue against it next week.
Okay.
There's your challenge.
I will do that.
In fact, I want more than that from you, Bruce.
Yeah.
I want you to photograph it.
Okay. I'll do that.
Oh, I love setting a challenge.
I will do that.
I love me setting a challenge.
Hang on. I've just opened up Lightroom. Let me go to ISO speed. Look at that. I've got some images at 100 ISO and some images at 4000 ISO in this
of exactly the same subject.
In this one particular folder.
Of exactly the same subject. It's got the same subject, you idiots.
Yeah. I'm just checking to see if I've got anything that's of the same subject within the same. No, I don't, unfortunately. I will do something.
They're all going to be sitting there just not even be able to breathe this week. In fact, I challenge all our regular listeners, except myself, because I don't listen, to do the same thing, see if we can prove because one person, what does that prove? If we get it like a quorum of people doing it.
Yeah.
There
what goes?
Well, if we can prove it one way or another based on the quorum of people, we can argue the point back in 2009.
I would like to hear from other people as well. On the face of it, based on what I've read so far, I disagree with the theory. I would be happy to be proven wrong, and if I am proven wrong, I'll definitely be keen to find out why it's different. But it seems to me, on the face of it, if you're shooting RAW and the number of pixels aren't changing, then the file sizes have to be the same. Because we're not talking about post-processing of an image, right, where a JPEG will compress, you know, multiple pixels that are the same color into a, you know, a sort of an averaged thing. That will change the outcome, absolutely. But in terms of RAW data, I don't believe there can be a difference in file size.
All my RAW files are different sizes.
You don't shoot RAW.
Occasionally. And they're all different. Is every RAW file you shoot exactly the same size, is it?
Sorry?
Is every RAW file you shoot exactly the same size?
I don't know. I thought they were.
Yeah, well, you know what thought, didn't you? thought his feet were out of bed. Couldn't have looked. They weren't. All right. Put your Lightroom open there. Pull up a couple of RAW files and tell me the file sizes. Let's do this live. Put the pressure on him.
Okay. I'm looking at just one random folder from the...
Oh, yeah, so one random photo is not going to help.
No. A folder from the 5th of June of this year. And no, they are different sizes.
Yes.
Not by much.
But enough.
Not by much.
But they're different.
We're talking we're talking 30 kilobytes over a 36 megabyte image.
They're different.
Not to the 44% larger file sizes claimed by this Petapixel article.
On this one, but how do you know? They might be all shot at 100 ISO, ones you're looking at.
Fair enough. I will do...
If all those are all shot at the same ISO, maybe they will all be the same size.
Maybe.
This is fascinating stuff.
It is fascinating.
Isn't this awesome? My goodness. This is two things. We've just overblown this entire podcast. We've taught you how to do better vacation photos, and we've just gone crazy with high ISO problems.
Opened a can of worms.
Oh, goodness gracious. What a week. We should stop. We should quit whilst we're ahead.
We should.
We should stop right there.
Absolutely quit while we're ahead. Well, mate, you have a good week.
Very often.
You have a good week.
Thanks, mate.
I'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
ShutterZinkPodcast.com.
Another audio2.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZinkPodcast.com.